Hello. Yes, I vented my plasma coil.
Hello. Did you eject the warp core?
Well, I went there once, and then I came out and I talked to the wife for a second, and then as I was standing there, I'm like, I gotta go back in there again, and then I ejected the warp coil. Real quick. Good. But while I was in there, I thought of a new, I have some faux Star Trek news when we get to Star Trek news. No,
fake.
It has nothing to do with
Star Trek news.
Faux, fake. I was trying to be fancy.
The word is faux.
Faux. I got some faux news.
You say faux news around here, people think you're being right.
Oi, I'm watching your faux news. What? Fake news. Right. Well, like Trump says, fake news. Faux news.
Your Cockney's actually pretty good. Arguably better than my Scottish.
You're not setting the bar very high there.
That's true.
Piss off. You stink-faced bastard.
Now that was Australian.
I know, I was trying to take a sip of a drink at the same time, and it just... I lost it.
You sound like Terrence Stamp in Superman 2, who's all very refined until he sees, "Get him! Get him!" He just turns into a Cockney all of a sudden. Very funny.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garrick. Plain, simple Garrick.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast. And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro.
Bloody hell. Oh, I love a woman in uniform.
Well, Paul Spataro, ruler of East Meadow, New York. Why do you say this to me when you know I will kill you?
Excuse me? What was that?
Usually you follow up with a la, but I guess this isn't that show.
So you wanted to make it a tandem la?
It was a preemptive la.
Go ahead, la.
I see your la and raise your la.
Go ahead and la before la. I do. Andy, do you have any laws left?
I have no laws.
Right. You're lawless.
I'm lawless. I'm lawless, Bill.
You're like Lucy Lawless.
Lucy Braless.
Okay. Hello and welcome to Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast here on the Two True Freaks Network, in which we are going through the entire run of Deep Space Nine, episode by episode, and taking it apart and looking at it and seeing what's left. I'm Paul Spataro, and I am once again joined by Dr. Bill Robinson.
Hey, you know what I just realized? Last episode was the 69th episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and we missed all those bad jokes.
But we made plenty of other bad jokes, though.
That's true. That's true.
That is true. And that other voice you hear is my good friend, Sir Andrew Leyland.
Sir Andrew Leyland. Did you see the level of abuse I'm getting?
I didn't quite hear what she said.
She said, "Not in this house."
Actually, it's probably a good thing we didn't do all those 69 jokes, because Andy would have been pummeled.
Perhaps Lady Angela doesn't think that. But.
No, Lady Angela rules the roost. Hello. Just in case I forgot to say it.
I was just waiting to hear, like, you remember in Superman the movie when the kid goes into the house and tells his mommy, "So Superman?" I was waiting for that.
How many times have I told you to stop lying? Smack!
Oh, when we meant child abuse into comedy.
Good times, good times.
I don't want to steal Sidney Franklin's shtick.
We're here today to do Season 3, Episode 24, Shakaar.
Shakaar?
It just sounds Shakaar? So much more...
To
like,
be honest,
like it should be an exciting episode. But we'll see what we get. But in the meantime, any Star Trek news or perhaps faux Star Trek news?
Well, I just heard from the Space Baseball League that they have decided to temporarily suspend the Hoarders from playing. One, because every time they get up to the bat, they keep burning in the ground, no strike eye. And then they also keep eating the bases when they're standing on them.
They're leaving a rut as they go from home to first.
Well, and sometimes they burrow under the ground and come up on the base, and that's not really fair. So, yeah, so they're being temporarily suspended from gameplay.
It's probably costing them a fortune fixing the field every time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And replacing the bases when they eat them, and yeah, yeah. And some players... He was out. Oh, he's gone. I don't know. The ball's gone. The other team's gone.
Poor Hoarders.
Yeah. So. No Hoarder baseball play.
From a other Star Trek news point of view, I don't really have any news, but before we went on, Andy and I were talking. We have a mutual friend, Zaki Hassan, and I recently discovered he does a show. I had known him from the Movie Film Podcast, which I had been listening to, but... I hadn't realized he does a second show called the, it's called Nostalgia Theater. And I only recently discovered that and started listening. And he did a Star Trek month on it. And he gets some pretty impressive guests on his show. And he did one where he interviewed Brannon Braga. That's it. And the interview was with regard to Enterprise primarily, but he does occasionally drift off and talk a little DS9 or TNG during it. But I found it a fascinating listen. I thought it was well done.
It was an excellent listen, and it was really lovely to hear him be openly critical as well as backslapping when he felt he needed to be critical of himself. I mean, what Braga was saying about that finale, the Enterprise finale, was really interesting to listen to, as how he felt that they just completely dropped the ball on what they thought the audience was. And there was a really lovely moment where he said the only time Scott Bakula ever lost his temper with him was when he got the script for that last episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought he was pretty open, like you say, about, you know, how he felt about different things that that went on in the production of the show and how they viewed it as they were going forward, what they were trying to do, what they thought the audience would want, and he, you know, he did openly say a few times, oh, I regret that, or I wish I had done this differently. So I thought it was really a good interview, and I think you guys should seek it out if you're interested in it at all. And as I said, he also did a month of shows. So he's got an episode where they talk about what's called the documentary about Leonard Nimoy with Adam Nimoy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So there's a lot of good stuff in there. That, as you know, Zaki does a real nice show. So I hate to recommend people to other networks that aren't ours, but hey, when there's good stuff, there's good stuff.
Yeah, wherever it comes from. And I heartily recommend the interview with Brandon Braga especially, but all four of those were really entertaining Star Trek shows.
And I guess that's it for Star Trek news for this week. It's not really news except for the baseball.
Well, yeah, if you had your money on the Hoarder Alliance winning this season, then sorry.
I'm just now I'm picturing like Packlids against Mugatu. the perennial last place teams.
I don't know. The Mugatus, you know, let the Mugatu win.
The Mugatu loses the game but then eats the opponent.
So do you think every season ends exactly the same, with it being the Klingons versus the Romulans every year?
Yeah, pretty much.
The Klingons bat with Bathless.
Yeah. The ball keeps getting sliced in half.
A baseball Bathless.
Oh, God. It has a bat attachment on the end.
Now you're making me think that's something Batman would have. A bat attachment. for a baseball bat. You know, when he goes out fighting crime and fists just start cutting it.
Robin goes, "What's that?" "It's the bat bat." "What?" "Did you stutter, Batman?"
"The bat bat."
"It's the bat bat." "Would it just be a bat?" "No, it's the bat bat." "That's a bat. That's a bat bat. See the difference? Bat, bat bat."
"Oh, I'm seeing double."
"Well, that makes sense because he's talking about a bat bat, so you should see double." Andy is seeing double while Bill is speaking in double.
Oh, God. Anyway.
Anyway, okay, so I guess we'll get to Shakaar.
The fuse is burning.
This is about the future of Bajor.
The explosion moments away.
I am talking about the beginning of a civil war.
The call to battle.
I will stop Shakaar by any means necessary. She wants a fight. I'll give her one.
Is a call to anarchy.
So this is a coup.
And a call that will make Kira a fugitive on the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Again, this is Season 3, Episode 24, directed by Jonathan West, written by Gordon Dawson. It's originally aired on May 22nd, 1995, and the guest appearances are listed as Louise Fletcher as Kai Winn, Duncan Rigar as Shakaar, Diane Salinger as Lupaza, William Lucking as Fiorel, Sherman Howard as Sivar, and John Doman as Linares. When the Prime Minister of the Bajoran Provisional Government dies, Kai Winn is appointed to his duties on an interim basis and is positioned to be formally elected to the office. Later, Winn approaches Major Kira with a special request. A group of farmers in Kira's home province refused to return some soil reclamators that Winn needs for Bajor's recovery efforts in Rakantha province. Their leader, Shakaar, also led Kira's resistance cell during the occupation, so Winn wants Kira to convince him to return the property. Kira is reluctant to confront her friend and mentor, but agrees to do it for the good of Bajor. Good old Bajor. Kira visits Shakaar, who calmly tells his side of the story. He only received the reclamators 2 months before, after a 3-year wait, and was told that he and fellow farmers, former resistance cell compatriots, Fiorel and Lupaza, would have their use for a year. But when Winn took over, they were ordered to return them immediately. Since the Rakantha project is geared towards farming products for export, while Shakaar's farmers are trying to feed their people, he sees his project as far more important. Kira encourages him to meet with Winn, hoping they can compromise. Kira tells Winn that she has arranged a meeting, to which Winn agrees. Later, as Kira briefs Shakaar for the discussion, two security officers arrive to arrest him. Infuriated that Winn lied, Kira helps subdue the officers and escapes with Shakaar. Now fugitives, Shakaar, Kira, and their comrades hide in the mountains where they once eluded the Cardassians. Weeks later, as Bajoran troops close in, Shakaar's exhausted group realizes there is no option but to stop running and fight. Reluctantly, he and Kira lead their pursuers into a canyon to set up an ambush. Hiding in the canyon, Shakaar and Kira watch as the Bajoran troops enter their trap. But as they see the faces of their enemies, and enemies is written in quotations, the realization hits them that they will be shooting their former comrades in arms. Unwilling to do this, Kira and Shakaar drop their weapons, and after a brief conversation with their leader, Colonel Linares, a ceasefire is called. Later, Linares takes Kira and Shakaar to Winn's office, where Shakaar informs her that he has decided to enter the election for First Minister. Realizing a competitive election with the popular Shakaar will expose how Winn's actions brought Bajor to the brink of civil war, Winn decides to step down from the race. Meanwhile, back on Deep Space Nine, O'Brien has recorded an incredible winning streak at darts in Quark's bar, hitting the bullseye consistently when he needs to. He calls this streak being in the zone. Quark collects bets on O'Brien with house odds of 15-1 in his favor. However,
On the day of his match, O'Brien leans back for a drink and severely injures his shoulder just before throwing his final dart. After surgery, O'Brien's streak appears to have ended. He hands his darts to Bashir, who immediately scores a bullseye. Quark welcomes him to the zone and leads him away. I liked this episode a lot more when Brian Keith was in it.
And Mr. French? Was, you know, sorry.
I mean, this was okay. But with the exception of just kind of setting a slightly new status quo, and only slightly new, as far as the Bajoran provisional government goes, it really didn't have a lot going for it for me. I thought this was, again, it was okay. It's not like it was painful to watch, but this is one where, like, as soon as it's over, it was kind of like, all right, move on. I don't know what you guys thought.
I actually really liked the Bajoran bit of this episode. I thought there was some nice little pointed lines, particularly from Odo at the beginning. My favourite being the problem with democracy is sometimes people make the wrong choice. That was quite a nice line. I like seeing Kira's resistance cell. I thought they were all really well-drawn characters. Played by good actors as well. William Luckin, obviously Colonel Lynch in the A-Team, but loads of other stuff. He would think he was in pretty much every television show in the 1980s. I certainly remember him in an episode of The Incredible Hulk. I know he was in an episode of Magnum PI. So he was good. Sherman Howard crops up as a Vulcan who was Lex Luthor in the Superboy TV show, so that was nice to see him. Duncan Regiar is probably better known as Zorro, but I remember him from V, where he played Charles, so of course they had him marry Diana, Jum-cha.
He was also in the Deep Space Nine episode where he was the ghost that Beverly fell in love with when her grandmother died, but he was like an alien life form in a candle.
Yeah, do you think this was their apology to him?
Could be.
Give him a proper part. But so I liked all the Bajoran stuff. I really liked the ending where the head of Bajoran security is also a former resistance cell leader who Kira or Shakar, I forget who, saved the life of. So when it comes down to the final confrontation at the end, there's that lovely line, I didn't spend 9 years fighting Cardassians to then fight Bajorans. Mm-hmm. And it's the two of them that reach the diplomatic solution that Kai Winn can't reach because she's a politician, not a soldier. And I just thought there was something lovely about that relationship. And I did like the end where they make Kai Winn stew in her own juice. Always a satisfying ending when you can do that to Winn. Louise Fletcher's brilliant again, as usual. The scene where she goes to Sisko and does her usual syrupy, well, I think you should help us by interfering. And Sisko's like, no. Well, one, we can't, because, you know, prime directive. But two, you're not actually a member of the Federation yet, so I'm not interfering with this, which I thought was lovely. The Bajoran stuff was great. For me, where this one falls over is O'Brien's subplot, which is pointless and a waste of time and only there to give those actors something to do.
The actor that played the Linares, that was John Dolman, who plays on Gotham as Don Falcone.
Oh, right. I thought I'd seen him somewhere before. Is he not another one of those guy actor though? Has he not got a long list of credits as guest star?
Yeah, he's been around. He's been around. But I almost didn't, even with, I mean, you know, the Bajoran makeup doesn't really hide much, but I'm looking at him going, man, who is this guy? But he's so much younger because, well, you know, it's like 20 some odd years. So it's like, wow. But I was like, so that's who that is. But, and I like how Kai Winn, you know, when she doesn't get her way with Sisko, then she's like, well, you know, maybe we just don't need to be in the Federation. It's like, I'm going to take my toys and go home.
Yeah, and it is, there's very definitely, Kai Winn's got her own agenda, and she doesn't, there's that lovely bit where she walks in and sees that Kira is still mourning Barail, and she's like, what are you still doing that for? He's been dead months.
Yeah,
and that just says so much about her that she probably didn't give him a second thought after she'd used him for whatever her own purposes were. She's such a wonderful character and so well acted.
Yes, child.
Oh, she's so syrupy.
Yeah,
she's I can't say enough great things about her when she's in the show.
She's definitely like she's the definition of characters that you love to hate.
Hmm. Just beautifully acted. My problem, another problem with this one at the end of the episode is like the one we saw just a couple of weeks ago where Sisko flagrantly disobeys orders, gets back to Deep Space Nine and just gets a slap on the wrist. And Kira does exactly the same thing here and there's no consequences of her running off and going up against the government in this 2 week quest or however long they're hidden away. And I kind of get a little bit bored when Star Trek does that, that there's never any consequences for their actions when they disobey orders.
Yeah, I don't think the military... Bill, you were in the military. Does it work that way?
No.
I think so, even if...
Not usually.
Even if the powers that be agree with your dissent and feel that it went to a good end, I still think they have to at least make the showing that you know,
well, technically, she's AWOL from two posts. She's a member of the Bajoran government or military, and she's AWOL from the station. Now, she did have permission to leave for the station, but not for 2 weeks. And she wore the same uniform for 2 weeks. She wasn't stinking after a while.
Oh,
and that looked pretty clean. Well, they still look pretty clean for being out there for 2 weeks. They should have, like, dusted them up a little more or something. You know, put some pit stains underneath the armpits or something. Soil
filth right here.
Rolling it.
Your clothes untouched by filth.
But you know, I once again, who's Shakar? Duncan Regier.
Yeah.
I didn't find him to be the charismatic leader that they want you to think of him as.
No, I liked Linares a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I felt he that actor carried that duty versus give me the word I'm looking for. Duty versus doing what's right thing.
Duty versus
better.
Honor.
Yeah, essentially. Thank you. He carried that much better than Duncan Regier did. Because in that, he's only got really one scene, hasn't he, really? And then the one at the end with Wynn. And in that one scene, you get that he knows what Wynn's asking him to do is the wrong thing to do. But he's got to follow orders. But his entire career is based on not following orders. Because he was a resistance leader.
Yeah.
And I think he gets that across in that one scene much better than Duncan Regier does. I think they cast the wrong actors in the wrong part. They should swap them two over. And I think you've got a much stronger episode.
I would agree. I even thought, what's his name, Pharrell? I thought he was a more charismatic leader than...
Well, William Looking is just a charismatic actor, isn't he? In anything he's been in, he's always just eminently watchable. I think they had a problem saddling him with having an arm cut off. Because there's numerous points in this episode where you're like, he's just got it tied behind his back, hasn't he? But yeah, his performance was good. And I liked his girlfriend as well. I don't recall seeing her in anything else.
She's one of those actresses that's been... Because I did a quick look, and she was in Charm. She's been in a ton of things. She's a voice actress. All kinds of stuff.
I think the casting of those three as old pals really works.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really... It's that scene that sells it for me. I buy that these are old friends. In ways that I don't think I necessarily have in the past in other episodes. But yeah, I do think if you give John Dorman the Shakar role, this episode would have been much stronger.
You know what role Diane Salinger jumps out? I'm looking at her filmography. Of all the roles she's played, and she's been in quite a few things over the years, but the one that jumps out at me is that she was in Pee-wee's Big Adventure as Simone.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
That's the one that I think, oh yeah, okay, I remember that. But yeah, I would have even been fine switching William Lucking and Duncan Regier. I just didn't think he had it. He didn't, you know, he delivered his lines okay, but I don't know, there was something about him that just didn't strike me as being real.
He was better than Baryl. But,
well, that's again a very low bar you're setting.
And not as bad as a block of wood. Yeah, he put for as as many things I've seen, he was also the vampire in the Monster Squad.
Yes, he was.
So he can act, but he was very stiff, very... Yeah.
He was in the Strange Case of DJ Cosmic as DJ Cosmic.
DJ Cosmic.
Wow.
That's got to make you want to watch.
But he played Zorro, so he had to have been...
Yeah, he was Zorro in a TV show, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's got to have some charisma. Yeah. Play Zorro.
I vaguely remember him being good in Zorro.
I didn't see it, but I mean, he quite possibly was good in that and has charisma, but he just didn't show it in this episode, I didn't think.
No, he didn't show it when he was in V either.
Well, that's because he was playing a Gorn in disguise.
Yeah, but he got to marry Jane Badler, so it's not all bad, is it?
Hmm.
So what else have we got here on this one? Before we get to the Quark, the subplot, any more on the Bajoran thing? I think we hadn't really heard, at least unless I'm mistaken, we hadn't really heard much about the First Minister in that role before this. Up to this point, I had kind of thought the Kai was it. You know, was the spiritual and governmental leader. I didn't realize that it was a separate thing.
So does Bajor have a separation of church and state thing then?
I don't know that they have a separation of it, but I think they have at least a titular leader of each.
Right.
Well, I didn't think that Kai was the leader of that Kai Winn was the leader of the government. I assumed she was like the Pope. She was the, you know, Bajoran space Pope.
I think she wields more power in Bajor than the Pope does on Earth.
Oh, true, yes, because Bajor is a much more religious society as a whole, the planet, instead of just one religion. Like, that seems to be the only religion on the planet. You're either that religion or you're not.
Yeah, there's the prophets and that's it.
Yeah.
But I think this was more a case of shifting the characters around for the future, because apparently Kai Winn was a late addition to the script, and it was only when they hit upon the idea of putting her into the mix that they felt the story actually worked. Mm. And I think they're absolutely right. If you try and imagine this story without Winn, it doesn't have anything at all going for it.
Well, before you put Winn in it, then it's a total reproduction of the Brian Keith episode.
Yeah. So it's another one of those episodes that I think I enjoyed the Bajoran stuff, I will confess, but I think it's another one of those shows that works better in hindsight when you know that this is shifting Winn into a position where she will become more prominent as the series goes on. And I think that's a case of them recognizing what a great bad guy they've got in Louise Fletcher.
I definitely think they're aware of it at this point. I think they're I think you're right that they are trying to position her for future use.
So was the I never really, or maybe I just didn't remember that. I don't think the Cardassians purposely poisoned the soil. Was it a side effect of stripping the planet for resources?
That's the way I would interpret it. Poisoned it, but that they had no regard for what they were causing.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, is it a possibility that it's a result of radiation exposure because of explosions?
Wait. What was that word again?
Radiation.
Yeah, if you're going to pronounce it, at least pronounce it right.
That's very true.
Sorry.
Yeah. Is it just a possibility the Cardassians' weapons have done this over the amount of time that they've been bombing the crap about the planet?
See, I'm back to a little bit of the church versus state aspect of this, and I'm wondering, like, if... Well, I guess she was acting as First Minister, so that's why Kai Winn would be getting involved in the...
Right, she was given the reign of power temporary. Yeah, and she's just mucking everything up.
Mm. But has she become First Minister as a result of
existing one.
Yeah.
No, because the other guy died. And didn't he die suddenly?
Well, in the way that Putin's adversaries die suddenly.
That was some strange Cardassian poisoning. I don't know what happened.
That was a very, very coincidental that he should die just as he opposes Kai Wynn.
Shush.
Nobody wants to hear you.
Eleven's got a lot to say about the episode.
Yeah.
She doesn't like Kai Wynn.
Well,
I think Eleven's getting tired of being cooped up in the room.
But I it would be interesting to have had an episode where she did oppose the existing First Minister about something that he was doing, and then he mysteriously and suddenly passed. And you never got any resolution as to whether or not she was involved in any way in that. Excuse me for just a second.
I think no, Eleven says that, "She killed her! She killed her!"
Or, I think she killed Eleven. Eleven's just got supremely good taste.
Probably because she's chewing on Paul's shoes. I guess. Are we ready to move out of politics into Colm Meaney's horrible acting? Oh, my shoulder!
Yeah, that's nice. His finest high point as an actor.
Oh.
All right, so I walked away for a minute and you made the point I was going to make.
Oh, sorry.
That was horrible.
Oh, my God. It's like...
Well, it's...
Hand me my drink.
All right, then. Is it deliberately horrible? Is he screwing Quark over?
The only way that makes sense to me, the way it was portrayed, is he and Bashir worked it out beforehand that he didn't want this going on anymore. And this was the way to kind of pretend... You know, because it could have all been fake.
Hmm. Yeah, but then that doesn't fit with the end where he says you've got a new shoulder now, does it?
It could, unless he was lying.
Well, possibly, I suppose.
Yeah, but there was no, like, winks and nods to lead us on to that. There's no...
No, I don't think there were. And I don't think... we're reading into it something that I don't think they were giving us.
Yeah, I just don't want Colm Meaney to be a bad actor.
I mean, yeah, just seemed, like, so overdramatic.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, I've never been present when anybody reached back and tore their rotator cuff, but I gotta think it wouldn't look quite like that. But you know, even the whole thing about him being in the zone was kind of, I don't know. I mean, I played darts in my life, and you know.
Hey man, I've been in the zone before.
I've been in the zone. First of all, the zone doesn't carry over day to day.
No, you're right. Usually it's like every now and then you'll just, everything will click and you'll be right on your game.
Yeah. I've had you'll it happen. You'll be on your game for that night.
Right.
That's it. Every night is a new night when it comes to the zone.
Hmm. Usually when I'm playing Andy in Battlefront, I'm always in the zone. Whoops.
Yeah, jetpack.
You're in the zone more than me. I'm a perfect stormtrooper, though, aren't I? I don't hit anything, and I get shot a lot.
Or you follow behind me with a jetpack and miss the
planet. just play with my jetpack. I got a jetpack.
Follow me, Andy. I regret nothing. I'm right behind you, Bill. Whoa! Andy, you missed the platform. Sorry.
Cheers, mate.
See, I'm taking this... side tangent as a sign of
what
we thought of this episode.
End. Yes.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it does try to address the whole terrorist versus freedom fighter thing, but it can't really do it successfully because we know that the Cardassians are bad guys. So you kind of on a rough footing. Yeah, so you're kind of on a rough footing there. So it can't really address it in any significant way. So the best thing to do when you can't address something in any significant way is to not address it, really. So I liked it for the relationship. I liked seeing Kira in a resistance cell. I thought the acting was mostly all pretty good. And I like what it does for Louise Fletcher's character at the end of the episode as we head into season 4. But I don't think it survives the flick test. I think it's a case of, nah, I've seen this one, carry on.
Yeah. I would tend to agree. I don't really... I was not enamored with this episode. But I do like to say, Shaka.
I guess we can rate this at this point. Basically, I agree with everything you just said, Andy. I did think Shakar was miscast. I didn't think he fit the role that they were trying to get him to fit. On the positive end of it, I liked Kai Winn whenever she was on the screen, and I liked John Doman. But beyond that, I didn't like the subplot. The whole darts thing didn't really do anything for me. And while I liked focusing on the resistance cell, I didn't think they did it in a way where I was all that interested in what was going on. So I think it's a below average episode. I don't think it was horrible, but I do think it was below average, and I'm going to give it a 2.
I don't really think it was too material, but I think, I mean, I like the way they developed the with Kai Winn and her manipulative nature, and so I think I'm gonna bump mine to a 2.5, 2.5 Pharrell lost arms.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Bella with 2.5. I don't think it's bad enough to be a 2. I think the acting and characterization is strong enough to elevate it from that. But yeah, it's one of those. You've kind of seen it. Some of the acting, some of the casting could have been a bit better. And the B plot's just shit.
Yeah, the B plot, that's what brings it down.
The B plot fails to prop it up, at least.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, if this had been recast, you know, switched some actors around, you know, we might have had more of a 3. Do you think maybe they took Duncan because, and this may sound silly, because he's taller than John Doman?
And if that was their motivation on it, I think that's silly, because you could always block it in a way to make the height.
Well, I mean, he just looks more
factor.
Rigyar looks more classically good-looking heroic.
Yes.
John Doman looks like Gene Hackman.
Yes. Yes on both accounts, but I do think John Doman was just a more charismatic person in this episode.
But did they do this knowing that they would use him down the road? Because he's...
I don't think at this point they ever know that. I think they respond to, does the actor work well? Is there anything else they can do with him? And does he tie into the overall plot? I don't think at this point they're really sitting down and arcing it out. Because Bear's only really been in charge for half a season. And I think it's only with season 4 we'll start to see that now he's in full charge of the show. They start sitting down before a new season begins and plotting out what they want to do this year. Because Berman's off doing Generations and Voyager. Iron Stephen Burr is given more of an opportunity to recreate the show in his own image. And he just doesn't buy stunning ones when you're in the same place at all. He thinks that there's a large, rich tapestry here of supporting characters and subplots and stories that they've got running that he feels that they just have to keep returning to that. And every time they return to that, it gives them more to play with. So starting next season, I think, is when they really start running with this idea of arcing out a basic storyline for the season, with the caveat that they do change things as actor availability and ideas that come to them suddenly don't seem to work that well. I think it's more a case at the moment it's all been dumb luck.
But you know what that doesn't answer for us? The time-old question of what would Blaine say? Blaine would say, "Hi guys, this episode is much more important than it feels. Kai Winn's move to First Minister is huge, and we'll see Shakar again. Jonathan West gets promoted from Director of Photography to Full Director for the first time. And he'll end up directing the best standalone episode of the series since Duet in a later season. The episode itself just gets the job done and doesn't really shine or suffer. It's passable, but it could have been better with the implications for the station given Wynn's new role." Yeah, I don't think Blaine disagrees with us on any aspect of this overall. I didn't think the directing particularly stood out in any way as being either good or bad to me.
It told the story.
Yeah, and there was no point where I felt like, you know, that he was losing us, or that they did something that, you know, really pulled us in. So, you know, the directing was what it was. That's all. But I'm not sure exactly which episode Blaine is talking about in a later season, but I guess we will get there, and more than likely I will agree with what he says on that. And yep. So that will be it for Shakaar. We have one piece of email. Do we have time to do it?
Go ahead. All right.
Do you want me to do it then?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. We have one piece of email in the inbox. We may as well deal with that right now. It's called Dax is Injured Again. It's by Alan Polk. Hi, guys. Hi, Alan. I recently binge-watched the entire DS9 series, then discovered your podcast and binge-listened, painful, to get caught up with your show. One thing that really stood out to me rewatching the series is that there are a large number of episodes where Dax gets injured and has to be tended to, guarded by others. This happened to her more than any other cast member. Add to that the Something's Wrong with the Symbiote, Get Jadzia to Sick Bay episodes, and you realise that Terry Farrell spends a lot of time on her back in this series. Try not to get too excited, there's enough drooling on the show as it is. Maybe you or some listeners less lazy than I can catalogue all of these incidents. Be on the lookout for them in future. But I think that ties into the conversation we had last week about this show is better than most of the Trek shows, about giving decent roles to the women cast members. But yeah, now that Alan points that out, and that it always happens to a woman cast member as well, maybe, you know, he's got something there. Alan continues, my other point is that I too am mystified by Trek fans who dismiss DS9 or never gave it a chance. One possibility that I've never heard you discuss is subconscious racism. Perhaps that's too weighty for your show, but I seem to recall it being openly discussed in the media at the time. Anyway, I thought it would be interesting to hear on the show from a DS9 detractor, either as a guest or in the email, exactly what they do not like and why, to see if it holds up to scrutiny. If someone is a fan of episodic one-and-done TV shows, then I can see why DS9 wouldn't be their cup of tea. But in every other aspect, I think Deep Space Nine is as good as or better than any other Trek series. However, I'm always interested in hearing a reasoned opinion to the contrary. Thanks, Alan. I think we're always open to other people telling us why they don't like the show and having a reasoned conversation about it. I'm interested in what he says there about some conscious racism. Is that referring to Benjamin Sisko, or rather Avery Brooks, being a black man?
I guess.
Because I don't know, well, certainly from our point of view, I don't think that's an issue, but I know my not liking of Voyager is nothing to do with the fact that Captain Janeway is a woman, and all to do with Kate Mulgrew's performance in that role. I think, I mean, you and Scott and Bill discussed this in a recent episode of Back to the Bins, the casting of something can hurt you. And I don't like Kate Mulgrew's performance in that role. I think she's far too mannered. And I don't like Robert Beltran's stiff performance as
Chakotay. You don't like her?
Chakotay.
No. I had to listen to that for 7 years.
It's exactly so. I don't like her performance, and I don't like Beltran's performance. So instantly in a Star Trek show, I don't like the captain, and I don't like the first officer. So I'm instantly on the back foot to enjoying that show. But that's nothing to do with Kate Mulgrew being a woman, because my understanding is she's actually an exceptional actress in Orange is the New Black, which I've not actually seen. So I don't know, it's an interesting topic, but I don't know how serious a conversation you could get from it, because I don't think anyone would actually just come out and say I don't like Deep Space Nine because the captain's black.
Well, I mean, clearly it's not been a factor with us, because we've all basically said that outside of the original series, this is our favorite incarnation of Star Trek.
Yeah.
So how, you know, you can't, I don't think you can acclimate, it's our favorite, and yet we'd have any sort of negative on Sisko. I think Sisko is an incredibly strong captain, and I think he's one of the reasons I like the show so much.
I think he's the best captain of all of them. He's the one who certainly feels the most military.
Kirk.
No, he's not. I don't disagree with you at all in that. I think in terms of the realistic depiction of the military, he's probably the best. But I don't think Alan's laying this accusation at us. He's asking, do we think that was one of the reasons people didn't like it? And I can only say, too, my disliking of Voyager being Kate Mulgrew's performance, not Kate Mulgrew being a woman. And maybe it's the same for people who don't like Deep Space Nine. Or maybe it's the people who don't like Deep Space Nine like Star Trek to be about exploration.
I'm not really... Oh, sorry, Paul, go ahead.
I just want to throw out there, like, I generally bristle at people who are very quick to cry racism at things. And I don't want to get too sociological here. You know, whenever something with a black person fails, or whenever they don't want to cast a black person in a role, or something like that, and people automatically go to racism, I am not comfortable with that in most cases, because I think it's a cop-out. In this particular instance, I'm not 100% sure that it doesn't have some merit. And I'm taking it to the point of we're going back to 1994, 95, 96, in that time frame, and I think things were a little bit different. I don't know if the country or the world was quite as ready for a black captain as they should have been. So I'm not going to discount that theory. I think that theory could actually have some merit to it, that as a general rule, there may have been some people who... And again, it may not have been conscious racism. He says subconscious, and I would tend to agree. But somewhere on some level might have been saying, nah, I'm not interested in seeing the, you know, to put it to like almost a humorous thing, the Jeffersons version of Star Trek. You know, like, I could see where somebody might think that way, even though it was wrong.
Mm.
And I certainly didn't think that way, and obviously you guys didn't either, so I do want to make that clear, because I love this show, and I always have since I started watching it. But... I think it may have had an influence over whether people gave it a chance in the first place. I think had they given it a chance, they would have been pulled in by it, and they would have seen what a good actor Avery Brooks is, and they wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't have been an issue. But I think it may have entered into people not giving it a chance in the first place. And I'm sorry I interrupted your thought, Bill.
No. No, what I was going to say is that I like Avery Brooks more as he went on in the show. I wasn't really fond of his performance of Sisko in the beginning, but I think he grew into it and got a lot better. And we're now, you know, we've been into that for a little bit where I think he's improved over the first season, obviously. So, I mean, I don't think I had any subconscious racism, because at this time I was in the service and the service, there is some racism, but not as much so. I want to say, I don't want people to take this the wrong way, in the real world, because the service is different. You're in a different version of the real world. Maybe, you know, it's a different relationship. You have to depend on people more. So there was a lot of times when I encountered racism in the service, I was shocked by it, because I'm like, yeah, we got to live on this ship in the middle of the ocean. We don't have time to be to have petty things like this. And then when I came back to the real world, you know, because I went from high school, like 1 year of college, 6 years in the Navy, and then back to the real world. And I was kind of like, wow, man, what is everybody's problem out here? It just... You know, I saw more of it. I've really tangented it off of the topic, I guess.
No, because it does relate to the question. And I've my granddad was in the Navy like you were, and he's told me stories of there were gay people in the Navy, because that's a big joke. But he said that when you're on the ship, you don't care. You're all doing a job. You all work together. And I think it's one of the more progressive things about my grandparents. He's 80-odd and doesn't care about stuff like that, because he worked with them. And he tells a really brilliant story about they all went off on shore leave once, and the only people who came back with their sexually transmitted diseases were the straight guys. The gay guys all took precautions. But that's, I think that relates into what we're saying, and what you were just saying, in the military, you've all got to work together. Like my granddad said, the guy may be gay, and you may be a big masculine pilot, but at the end of the day, he's servicing your plane. You don't want to have a problem with the guy who's keeping you alive.
Right. I mean, and it's not like you were forced to. It was just that it was just understood. It wasn't, there was no time for that. You know, it just wasn't a thing. It's not, I'm not saying it doesn't exist there, but it doesn't exist to the same proportions as in regular society. I just don't believe it does. So,
good. Right. So, I don't know that is too deep for our show, Alan. I think we just got into it quite a lot, though. But yeah, that's the only thing I can relate it to, is my dislike of Voyager's nothing to do with her being a woman. It's all to do with the performance. We all love Avery Brooks, and we all think Sisko's a great character. So it's an interesting topic for debate, though.
It definitely is. And like I said, I'm normally not so accepting of that, because like I said, sometimes I feel it's a cop-out. In this instance, I think it possibly is valid. Because I don't understand why this show isn't more popular than it is. I really don't. I'm very confused by that. And we do anticipate in season four, at least at some point during the season, we anticipate Scott Gardner coming on. And Scott is pretty vocal about the fact that he's not a huge fan of DS9. So I think we will get his perspective, and I'm pretty confident it will have nothing to do with race.
No, because Scott's talked about his dislike of DS9 before, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, so I won't paraphrase it again here. He can speak for himself. But they were all reasoned and intelligent reasons. I didn't agree with them because I loved the show, but I understood the point that he was making.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That said, what are we doing next time?
Next time, our all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets. It's the many facets of Jadzia Dax. Yes, it's a Trill episode.
An ancient ritual.
If you don't mind, I'd like to borrow your bodies for a few hours.
This transference seems to be complete.
Brings Dax's memories back to life.
You're asking me to hand my body over to some dead person.
Jorian.
The past.
Jorian! Stop it! You're hurting him!
And the present.
I want my memories back.
Are about to collide on the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Or the title of the episode. What was that?
Jadzia episode.
Jadzia episode. Or as I like to call it, treat me like the symbiote that I used to know.
You should have sung that.
Treat me like the symbiote that I used to know.
That was actually really good.
Yeah, I'm surprised I got that out.
So we'll see you all in 2 weeks.
See you later. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for that very thought-provoking email, Alan. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
Oh, sorry. I've just elbowed Ange in the face. Why were you crouched to the side of me? Sorry, love.
Don't ever hurt our Angela.
I didn't know she was there.
You saw me put the pen
I saw you pick the pen up. I didn't know you were still there.
We're witnesses. We saw it.
Oh yeah, sorry about that.
If there's anything that's gonna make me hop on an intercontinental flight and come out there and kick your ass, it's hearing that you hurt Angela.
I didn't do it on purpose. Sorry, love.
I'm buying my ticket now. We're gonna come over there and kick your ass.
Oh, I don't think you need to. I think she could kick my ass.
It doesn't matter. We want to now.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm slapping an electronic glove in your face. I will see you on the battlefield of Battlefront.
Beat me to death.
Slay you.
Okay. All right. Well, you got to get to work. Have a good day, gentlemen. That was really good. I enjoyed that. And we'll talk in 2 weeks.
All right. See you then.
All right, guys.
See you later, boys. Bye-bye.
Bye.